This hour of Overdrive is powered by Rockstar Real Estate. Local investors make big money in real estate without touching a hammer. How? Go to OntarioRealEstateBook.com. Check out this step-by-step system. It's a must-read. Visit OntarioRealEstateBook.com.
Never filtered. Always fun.
1996, Greg Norman sharting in his pants on the ninth tee and losing to Nick Faldo. The great white shart.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the official voice of the Leafs.
All right, Mike Babcock coming up here in just a moment. He is bumping Ray Ferraro, so Ray's going to have to come on in the 6 p.m. hour. Babcock gearing up for Game 1 Thursday night in Boston. We've been waiting a long time to find out who the Leafs would play in the first round. There are only two options, but the Bruins' door opens up. And chance for redemption. I know Babcock wasn't here. A lot of these guys weren't here, but the fans were. Fans have been waiting a long time, so yep. We'll catch up with Mike in just a moment. Coming off a big weekend in the sports world, we all know what happened Friday night in Saskatchewan. We will continue to look back on that, reflect on that, and discuss what will hopefully happen in the future. We haven't talked about the Masters. Your buddy Todd Lewis from the Golf Channel will join us, and we just played that clip of the great white shark, or is it
shart?
The great white shart, Greg Norman, who
I was praying that Patrick Reed would pull the great white. I don't know the guy. I can't comment on the guy. There's something about him that's not likable.
People don't like him.
He's despised by everyone.
Well, why? Like, what did
he
do?
He's got no emotion. Like, he seems like
emotion. He's full of it, but.
He's full of himself. Like, right. He does play with some emotion. Like, when he hits big putts and shots.
Not the play, but, like, the emotion towards the family. Like, there's to me, this guy's not, he looks like he's unlikable. Put it that way.
Well, it was a weird reaction to him winning yesterday. It didn't feel like anyone wanted that to happen at the course.
I'll tell you, other than Tiger and Phil being on the leaderboard, everybody was there. They were all up there. Ricky, Spieth, Bubba, Stenson, Justin Thomas.
Well,
they're all hanging around.
You know who kind of Greg Norman was? McIlroy. McIlroy kind of great white sharked the whole Sunday afternoon. You know what saved him was Spieth doing what he did. Spieth having a near historic Sunday afternoon completely took the spotlight.
If it was just him melting and Spieth Reed running away with it, It'd be all McIlroy.
All McIlroy.
Like, he's done that before, too. He had a massive lead and got to the 10th hole, and he literally did pull a great white shart.
Yes, he did.
He hooked it in someone's bedroom in the guest houses on 10
that was
and melted from there.
Like 7 years ago. It seems like it wasn't that long ago, but it was. And he had never won a major. He's never won the Masters. That's what he's missing. He's got the other three majors. He's waiting to complete the Slam. And he's lucky, man. He's lucky Spieth did what he did. Thomas did what he did. Fowler did what he did. Because if it was a two-horse race, right. Reed and McIlroy played the way he did yesterday, it would have been really deflating for him, deflating for fans. But the Masters generally supplies something, right? And it did yesterday. It was a cool finish. It was a cool back nine. Tiger Woods, I don't know what you'd take out of his week. He's not ready to compete at the majors, I guess. I mean, he didn't play well.
Not a bum, though. I mean, he was...
No, he's not a bum, but, like, I was talking him up. I really thought he could compete this weekend, and he's played really well leading up to the Masters, but this is why majors are a totally different ballgame.
Yeah, it just didn't happen for him, unfortunately. Like, I thought he was, to me, in watching him, I mean, they followed him so closely, but it was early in the morning. Like, that's what stinks,
that
too,
was what
right?
was kind of, it's almost embarrassing. Like, the leaders are teeing off, and they're like, let's go to Tiger on 16.
Birdie putt to get to plus two.
Yeah.
Like, stop it. They will never stop it, though.
No, they won't, and I understand why they won't. There's a fascination.
He moves the needle.
He moves the needle. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So, Todd Lewis from the Golf Channel will join us in about 25 minutes. Rougned Odor remains maybe the most hated guy in Toronto sports.
You think so?
I think Marchand's got an opportunity to take over.
I think there's going to be a guy that is going to be focused on Thursday who could elevate to that status.
It is an interesting question. Like, who would be the most hated opponent in the Toronto sports scene right now?
Give us your ideas, people. Tweet us, @HaysTSN. But or here's, at Overdrive.
Here's 1050. The difference. Marchand's a superstar. Odor's not.
No, he's not. Marchand most certainly is a superstar. But
like Marchand acts like a jackass. He's made jackass moves that have gotten him suspended. But he's also a superstar player. Where Odor doesn't, to me, although he's a very good player, he's not.
His numbers have really dropped ever since that punch.
Really?
Yeah, his couple of years leading up to that, he was an up-and-coming young player, like really quality numbers, and a guy that you thought has a real chance of being an impact player. He's been awful.
But post-punch?
Post-punch. Somehow it affected him more, at least his statistics. Maybe that's it was a coincidence. Maybe he was going to fall off anyway. But I would think Odor is on a short list, and that stunt he pulled over the weekend on Stroman, that would have built up the hatred towards him that much more. Marchand would be on that list.
I'm trying to think. Is there anybody at that TFC or...
Maybe like, the manager for this Club America.
That, yeah, that's true. But that's not a long... Character.
Isn't he kind of... LeBron, isn't he kind of the guy that crushes us every time?
Yeah, but I don't think he's...
That's jealousy.
Love-hate.
That's jealousy. It's not hatred. It's yeah, like, can you not, leave us alone?
Yeah, he's not yeah, after every game yeah. like... In your face, Toronto, like just being a jackass. He's
no.
like, okay, I'm the best in the world.
I think what makes you hate on him a little bit, which is so silly, but it's so sports, is that he is so humbled, not humbled, but he is so respectful of Toronto and the Raptors. And
after almost like he's trolling you.
Yeah, after he beats them every year, he's like, isn't this great, man? This is a really good team and a great town.
And he always follows it up with the fans here. I've never seen fans like this. They got great fans here. It's awesome.
Always.
Thanks, pal.
Like, thanks, LeBron. If you like us so much, how about you mail in a series?
Or how about you sign here if you like it that much?
There's another answer.
Yeah.
I love that. There's, like, every other city in North America.
Man, this city's so awesome in the playoffs. I've never seen fans like this. You want to sign here? No way in hell.
Not happening.
No way in hell.
I know.
Wow.
But you love it.
I know. You're now, right. Like now, it's like, okay, I'm going to Philly. Maybe he's going to Houston. Maybe he's going to the Lakers. Maybe he'll stay in Cleveland. But Toronto, just never an option.
No. Not even a thought.
Not even a thought. Like, that's the true. Knicks are still holding out hope. The Knicks.
Well, they're... It's the city of New York. That's what it is. The Knicks organization is not optimal right
it's now. It's the idea, though. It's the idea. It's not the Knicks. It's the idea of if I go there... I can be the guy that turns the Knicks around. That's the lure of those big markets.
That gravitational pull is real, man.
Yeah, it is. Because you want to turn that Knick jersey back into a relevant thing. LeBron goes there and does that. He's more than the god that he already is.
Well, that's true, man. And if you're right. If you win in New York, it's worth a lot more than winning in Cleveland. That's or winning true. In Miami. Or maybe not in L.A., but... Yeah, probably in L.A., because the Lakers have had success,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, Kobe won 5 rings there.
Yeah.
And recently, like 6-7 years ago, they were winning rings. The Knicks haven't won anything.
Yeah.
Like, they don't go to the playoffs. They're not relevant. They've got nothing.
Yeah, it's been a...
So that would be... it'd be an interesting pitch. There. Like, you'd have to be really honest about it. If you have an opportunity to meet with LeBron, and you're the GM or president of the Knicks... First thing you do is you do not mention the name Jim Dolan. You pretend like he doesn't exist.
Well, you're going to have to say JD or something.
I think you just avoid it altogether.
There's a blank check that says JD on it. He's the one who's signing it.
Doesn't matter. You do not want to promote that's the owner. So if you can get that out of the conversation, stricken from the record, I guess the sales pitch is, yeah, come here, win in New York, and it's way more valuable than anywhere else. Like, I said the same thing about the Leafs. I think a cup win in Toronto is worth 2 or 3 cup wins anywhere
else. Ryan Burke said it best. They've named schools and streets after you.
Well, isn't Mike Babcock a guy that, you know, pretty much is the gentleman if he delivers a Stanley Cup to
I would think that was a part of the pitch from Shanahan.
Yeah.
And part of the belief in coming here by Mike Babcock. I mean, he's won cups before. He's won gold medals. He's achieved everything you can achieve.
Yep.
So what's the next step? Find a unique way on winning. A unique way of winning. And that's winning in a place that has seemed impossible for the better part of 50 years.
I'm sure that was part of the allure of Joe Maddon going to Chicago.
Exactly the same.
Be the manager that gets this team over the hump and actually win in this town.
Mm-hmm. And look at what Maddon did in Chicago. Now he's a legend. He's a Cub legend for the rest of time.
Yeah.
The curse is over.
That's true.
Francona in Boston when they won in 04. Same thing. If you're the coach or the manager, of a big market team with a ton of history that has not won anything in a long time, that's got to be a great sales pitch.
For sure.
It's got to be. Let's bring him in here. Here's the head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Mike Babcock. How you doing, Mike?
How you doing, guys? What am I selling?
Well, we were talking about maybe the sales pitch to you before you came here from Detroit. We were talking about LeBron a couple of minutes ago, LeBron James and the allure of playing in New York and what that would mean like to win in New York as a Knick. And we brought your name up thinking...
We brought Joe Maddon up.
Madden up with the Cubs, and exactly, and thinking maybe that was running through your mind, the idea of winning in Toronto and how important that would be.
No, there's no question about that was definitely part of it. Larry Tannenbaum obviously was a huge part of it. Spectacular city. But, you know, I've done a lot of things for Hockey Canada, with Hockey Canada in Canada, been with an original six franchise, knew how special that was, wanted another opportunity and felt obviously the challenge here was huge. And there was opportunity here. Now, you know, until you get it done, you're just talking about it. But we've made good strides, and we're excited about our opportunity here.
How tough was it off the hop, Mike? I mean, you said the challenge was huge. I mean, you must have looked at that roster, thinking about it, saying, Jesus, we need this, that, the other. And there's a lot of things that go into it. It must have been difficult to grasp that when you took on the job.
Well, there's no question about it, and I think when you finally make the decision and then you get here, and then when you're at training camp, that's when you start to get really, really worried. And you're saying to yourself, how long is this going to be? How long is this going to be? And you don't really know until you get in there and you get grinding, but, you know, the guys have done a real good job. Lou just managing the team with trades and with contracts has been absolutely unbelievable. Our scouts getting us players, the growth of the farm team and what they've been able to do, and suddenly we're a much deeper roster. Now, in saying that, there's a whole bunch of good teams in the National Hockey League, and we're all after one prize. And you know, I've been around quite a while and been with lots of good teams. It's hard to win, and you need competitive, invested people in order to do that. And sometimes it takes a little bit of heartache at playoff time to learn some of these lessons. Ideally, we're going to be one of those teams that can dig in and get to another level, because we're really going to have to if we want to have success.
A lot of times in these series, the 27 to 30-year-old stars kind of, they win against the 20 and 21-year-old stars. It's just kind of a fact in hockey. How do you change that? Is it just, I don't think there's a pump-up speech you can give the guys to turn that around. Is it just, it's up to them, you got to go out and do it?
Well, I think that's 100%. And I mean, you just look at their top line. Two of those guys are world-class players, and they're helping the other guy along the way. And they're competitive people, ultra-competitive people. So your skill's a wonderful, wonderful thing, God-given. And it gets you through a lot of times, but your will is what gets you to the next level. That's what gets your name on the cup. That's what gives you the opportunity, especially if you're an A player and you got to drive the bus. And so, I mean, you're going head-to-head every night with one of the best players in the world, and you got to outplay them. And that's just the reality of the situation. But I think also that's what makes it fun. Now, if you're our young guys who think they're great and they are really talented guys, they know now it's time to dig in, and they know there's going to be no space. And, you know, I think we've been preparing for it and saying that. When you get out there night after night and there's no room, you got to stay patient and you got to keep digging and keep grinding. And in the end, you'll get your chance. And when you get your chance, you got to make good on it. That's the way it is. But I think it's an exciting opportunity for our team. We're a much different situation than we were last year. The expectation for our group over the years is going to obviously increase. And that's where the fun is.
They got some guys on their team, the Boston Bruins, that there's no other way around it. They're a pain in the ass. David Backes, Brad Marchand, Chara is a pain in the ass. How do you approach that? Like, do you want guys to, like, you want your guys to have their emotional level raised and raised, and but you don't want to be involved with that, because that's not really in the DNA of your players. So what do you do with those guys? Just get away from it?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously it is for some of our guys. Leo's going to be involved like that. I think if you're one of those guys, Paulie's going to be involved. I think if that's who you are, that's what you do. The biggest thing in hockey is you can't ever take a step backwards. You got to command your share of the ice in your own way. And as long as you'll never go away there's no issue. And people in the end, they don't bother you when they know you won't go away. What they do is if they know they can back you up an inch, they're willing to take a mile. That's just the way the sport is. That's always the way it is. Chiron is going to whack you every time you get near that net. You got to decide if you want to score or not. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to score, don't go near it. We're not going to win that way, though. But if you want to score, you got to go there. And you got to pay the price to have success. But I think that's what is so exciting about the Stanley Cup playoffs. I really do. And that's why you see guys who maybe haven't been a star all year as far as scoring stats go, suddenly they're unbelievable in the playoffs because they'll get their nose dirty. They'll get on the inside. And if we don't want to get in on the inside, you can't have success.
We're chatting with Mike Babcock, head coach of the Leafs. Game one Thursday night in Boston. It took until the end of the season to find out who you guys were actually going to play. But we've known for quite some time what position you were going to end up in. You were going to be third. You were going to start on the road. How difficult was it for you to keep the team motivated, to keep everyone in the right frame of mind, considering complacency, I'm sure, was an option?
Yeah, you know, I didn't feel it at all until the last two games. I thought the guys did a real good job. Stayed focused, good energy, lots of fun, trying to get better each and every day. I thought the last two games, the intensity at the start of both games was low. I mean, our practice was twice as fast as the last two games today. So it just goes to show you, you're only human. You know where you're at. And saying all that, not knowing who you're going to play, we changed our mind a bunch of times, I thought for sure. Yes, I spent the whole day grinding on Tampa yesterday. I don't know what I did that for, but it's just one of those things. You got to be careful what you wish for in playoffs. Both Tampa and Boston are real good teams, and we're just excited to have the opportunity to play them. But in saying that, we think we're a real good team. Now, we're going to find out whether we are or not, and because it's crunch time now. But we think with our depth, with our team speed, with our ability to play the game, we think we have an opportunity. And to me, one of the biggest things, you got to convince yourself first. Once you convince yourself, you got a chance to do it. But I'm a big believer our group has a lot of belief.
There was a lot of debate leading up to the final weekend of the season, on this show anyway, about whether you would end up sitting some guys, give some guys a rest, whether you should do that. You didn't decide to do that with any of your big boys. They played every single game down the stretch. Take us through that thought process and whether or not you were even thinking about giving guys nights off.
Well, what we just did is we just had 4 of 8 days off. And the way our schedule was, we had less games at the end than everyone else. We had a ton early, and then we had those breaks. And so we felt with 4 of 8 days totally away from the rink, like I've never even heard of that in hockey. I don't think it helped us play good, to tell you the truth, in our last two games. But we really felt the rest was more important. And the way our week is set up, we really went out of here today and a lot of structure stuff and worked real hard. Tomorrow's going to be special with teams and face-offs, and then the following day we'll be up-tempo and we'll be ready to go. I think we've had a ton of rest. The other thing I'd say to you is being in a rhythm. And I've been through this with a lot of veteran players before, whether it be Lidstrom, whether it be Cronwell, Datsyuk, Zetterberg, and going through how you want to feel going in. You know, it was always the same thing, got to feel good. Now, if you're nicked or bumped, or sore or anything like that, that's a totally different story. But that wasn't the case for our guys, and we tried to prepare. Part of knowing where you're going to be was you had lots of opportunity to prepare practice-wise to be rested and feeling good going in.
Mike, when you talk about rhythm, is that what the same thought process you had with Freddie Anderson, making sure that he had a little rest in the beginning of last week, and then you play him Thursday, Saturday, so it's not a massive break before Thursday night game in Boston?
That's exactly what we did. Just because if you go through the year and you look at when Freddie's been hurt or had some off spells, that's the toughest time for him. He doesn't feel like he's in a rhythm. These optional skates we've had every game, he doesn't go on. We've tried to really manage him that way, and yet he's a guy who needs to play. And so we felt it was important to give him a good break. Things hadn't gone as good for him, and then get him feeling real good going in. I really thought it was important the other night for Freddie that the guys stepped up and helped him win that last game. I think, it's an individual thing. It doesn't matter, I guess, in some ways, but having the least record, I think, is a big deal. I really do, as far as goalie wins. I thought his performance, I mean, I don't know what we were doing in the first period the other night against Montreal, but I thought I thought he was good. In Jersey, they had shots, but they didn't have chances. They had one in the first. But the other night in Montreal, I mean, we were passing it to him in the slot there just to warm him up, to make him feel good. I guess I don't know what we were doing exactly. But what I felt was that Freddie felt good leaving the game. He had played two games, got a good rest, he practiced good today. You know this better than anybody. You need goaltending at playoff time, and we have a goaltender. And we have a goalie that's loved by the team. And the guys felt great for Freddie the other night, and I think that's an important thing.
Well, it wasn't only him that made history over the weekend. You guys set a new franchise record for points in a season with 105. And when you consider what we were talking about when you first came on 2 years ago, you guys were dead last in the league, and now you're setting franchise records. I mean, is there anything in particular you can point to that you look back on over the past 2 years and say, this is why we managed to do this so quickly?
Well, obviously, I mean, good players. I mean, Mitch Marner, William Nylander, Matthews, but real good depth players. I mean, Hyman and Brown, you look at them, even the influx of this year. We basically got the opportunity to trade for three players in Dermott, in Kapanen, in Janssen. I mean, there's good depth there. And then the guys, veteran guys that have been here a long time, like Bozak and Van Riemsdyk and Komarov. You know, I don't know who I left out here. I don't like to leave anyone. Nazem Kadri, what he's turned. It's back-to-back 30-goal years. I mean, the guys have embraced wanting to be good. Our guys think they're good. They are good. And you don't get 105 points. You don't get 49 wins by accident. You do it right on a daily basis with enough depth, and you get to feel good about yourself. And our guys are proud to be Leafs. Like, this is an unbelievable city. I mean, you guys live here. The hockey here is like nothing I've ever seen. I've been to the Stanley Cup Final in Anaheim. I've been to it in Detroit, original 16. There's nothing that compares to this. Absolutely nothing. So to be good in this town, I think is a special thing for our guys, and they're embracing it.
Obviously a very emotional weekend, considering what happened on Friday night in Saskatchewan. And you spoke openly about your own emotions on Saturday. And I thought the Leafs, I thought Winnipeg, I thought Leafs throughout the league did a great job of paying respect before the game. Take us through your mindset once the puck dropped. I mean, could you focus on the game, or was Humboldt popping into your mind from time to time?
Well, they kept putting all the money being raised on. Every time they looked for a replay, they kept putting the thing up. It was hard to get it out of your mind and out of your head, and you should. You know, it's been interesting. I was on a bunch of calls again today. One of my buddy's son was on that bus, and you know, he tells the story. His son tells him, you know, he's alive. He says, he wakes up unconscious, and the kid next to him screamed. He said, "Don't worry, help's coming." Well, that kid never made it. And then he tells the story about, you know, I was on the phone with him for 40 minutes the other day, and he was telling me, his son told him the week before, "Dad, this is the best group of guys I ever played with, greatest group of guys I've ever been involved with." He tells a story about arriving at the accident 2 hours later, and the kids are all gone, and they're in that church together. Who's ever there, they're praying and crying, and then he gets the call from the hospital, his kid's alive, and he says he doesn't even feel like he can celebrate. You know, it's been unbelievable. I talked to the coach's wife the other day, and you know, she's got two beautiful boys, and yeah, no husband. I mean, you go on, and you watch the celebration there of life there last night. I mean, all these things. I don't know what you can say or what you can do, but I think it's important in the hockey community. We do everything we can to reach out, put our arms around people. The financial support's important, but I think the love is just so important. And, you know, I can't imagine losing a child, honestly. I just can't. I don't know how you'd ever recover, and I don't know if you would recover. But we're obviously praying for these people.
Yeah, I think you speak for everyone when you say that. It was it's been really tough 72 hours, and you guys obviously have an opportunity coming up. The whole league does. Once you guys start getting into the playoffs, I think a lot of Canadians are looking forward to getting focused on something else, at least for a short period of time. So we appreciate you joining us today. As always, best of luck come Thursday night.
Hey, guys, thanks for having me on. All the best.
There's Mike Babcock from the Toronto Maple Leafs. Game one Thursday night in Boston. And he's a Saskatchewan boy himself, and you can tell he's emotional about it. And I mean, that's a tough story. And that's so true. I mean, I couldn't imagine if you were one of the lucky parents where your kid survived.
Yeah, and you're standing next to somebody.
I don't know what you say. What do you do? I don't even know how you'd handle that.
Yeah.
And then you get this just heartbreaking story today about the misidentification where all I could think about is, like, both families. One thinks their kid is gone. The other one thinks their kid is alive, and now it flips. But
And
I don't know.
You can't blame, like, from what I understand and what they were saying, like, it's not like it wasn't cut and dry. Like there was,
they weren't. It wasn't malpractice because they were just winging it. And
no,
you know,
like
obviously
that speaks to them having a tough enough time trying to identify people because of the magnitude of the accident.
That's the carnage we're talking about. Yeah, you couldn't even identify your own kid.
And I think we were talking off air, like all the kids had dyed their hair, like they're, you know, they're 6'1" with blonde hair. Well, there's probably 10 of the kids, you know, that had that. Like, it just, like I said at the start of the show, so many different layers to this that it's heartbreaking. You hear a story like that where Mike has reached out to a couple people. I'm sure he's tied to. I heard a few heartbreaking stories over the weekend, too, from my buddies back home. And it's just, they're going to pour out, and it doesn't make anybody else's stories worse or better than the others. It's just there's so many of them and so many different strands. You heard the emotion in Chaser's voice too. It hits home with all of us because we've all been on that bus, all of us.
Yeah, it does. Not only in Saskatchewan, you're right.
No,
and that's the infrastructure of junior hockey throughout the country.
Yeah.
So everyone, if you played, if you know anybody that played, and let's be honest, in this country, everyone has a connection to a story like that. You didn't have to be on the buses to understand the sanctity of the buses, what the bus means, and the buses continue to drive on. You know, the CHL playoffs are continuing right now.
Yep.
Like, so all weekend, there were buses driving all over highways throughout the country, and that's not going to stop. Thanks again to Mike Babcock. We'll catch up with Todd Lewis from the Golf Channel. Look back on Patrick Reed's win at the Masters. Why is this guy being depicted as a villain? Feels like nobody's a fan
They're
of this
not
guy.
Happy for
no
him.
One's happy that he won. What happened over the weekend? Is there anything Tiger Woods can take from this leading up to the U.S. Open and the other three majors still on the calendar this year? And Rays coming up in the 6 p.m. hour. Jays in Baltimore. Raptors clinching home court throughout the East. They had a historic night on Friday night. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050. I'm keeping tabs on the O-Dog because of your story that you revealed about an hour ago, your neighbor's dog.
I'm not going to lie. I'm being dead serious. My joints are starting to get sore, and I'm getting hot.
I'm really worried about you. Like, what if you have rabies? If you go down with rabies, I want a full-blown inspection. I want to be there with you at Mount Sinai, Sunnybrook, wherever it is.
Don't you have to go? This is a stupid question, but don't you have to go to a vet?
You don't go to a vet.
I'm pretty sure you don't go to a vet.
I mean, if that's the only doctor, what do you...
Mullen. I want to make sure. I've got to review the tape. I'm not convinced you actually just asked me if you're going to a vet because you have a medical issue.
But wouldn't a vet be able to tell you if you have rabies?
He would be able to tell.
I think a doctor could probably do that. I'm pretty sure a doctor would be able to
check
that off.
The vet would check the dog out. A doctor would check you out.
How would you feel about going to a vet?
Yeah.
Depends what he's doing.
What if he's like, okay, you drop your drawers and bend over.
The Dr. vet Jelly is finger. Not doing the digit trick.
Well, I'm just
the
saying.
That's what they do, not. Man. They get right in there for dogs. Like, I've had an emergency dog situation. I was looking after my mother-in-law's dog.
A dog shocker?
He got, the dog was like really lethargic and... He was an older dog, and we were freaking out. We're like, we should take him to like an emergency vet.
Right.
And we were in there for the full inspection, and they get
involved.
Well, because a dog can't tell you what's wrong with them. Right. You on the other hand can do that.
You'd be like, sir, it hurts right here,
not here or here.
What if he's treating you like a dog? How do you feel, fella? How do you feel, fella?
Hop up here, buddy. No, what if hop up here?
What if he first says, what are they?
Sit up here. Come on, boy.
Come on, buddy. Come on.
Name, please. Name, please. O-Dog. Okay, boy. Up you go.
Come on.
Where's your owner? Who do we talk to? Here's a treat on the way out. He throws a dog bone at you.
Yeah. You want to chew on this while you're getting looked at?
Oh, my God. That's so funny. I need you at the vet. I need you to go to the vet. All right. How do we segue into this? I'm pretty sure Todd Lewis has been on the line for this whole conversation.
Sorry, Todd.
He's from the Golf Channel. Here's Todd Lewis. What's happening, Todd?
Hey, I'm trying to figure out what's going on there, but I like it.
Well, we're worried about our buddy the O-Dog here. He may have a medical issue that he thinks he has to go to a vet for instead of a doctor. And we're just envisioning the idea of him acting like a dog at the vets.
Todd, this is not true. We have to get into the golf talk, all right? Hard-hitting golf talk.
All right, Brian. Let's go 60 minutes on our buddy Tom. Take it away, O-Dog.
Well, we were talking about Patrick Reed earlier. Why is this guy not liked? It's just a fact. He's not popular. I don't think he's popular amongst other guys on tour, and basically the fans have the same thoughts.
Well, I don't think that's completely accurate. I think that he is kind of a lovable villain, especially when he's wearing the red, white, blue representing the United States in the Ryder Cup or the President's Cup, he's their guy. He doesn't have the golden boy image that Jordan Spieth has or Ricky Fowler has. And, you know, he can be a bit abrasive. He welcomes confrontation. But I don't think he's unliked. He may be not liked as much as Jordan, but Jordan has an incredible resume. And, you know, he's got three major championships, and Patrick just won his first. I think that will build as he continues to win major championships, if indeed that happens.
What do you make of this story? Nike, who he signed on with recently, told him he's not allowed to wear the red shirt on Sunday.
It's not just him. Every Nike ambassador was not allowed to wear that red shirt. That means Tony Finau, Paul Casey, Jason Day, all those guys, because Nike wants their biggest star in his trademark red.
So does Tiger have anything to do with that, Todd?
Pardon me?
Did Tiger have anything to do with that? Is that Tiger-driven or...
Well, I mean, let's think about it. That's his brand on Sunday, isn't it? So I'm sure he had a conversation. He had a voice in that. Yes, no doubt.
I don't think
I was
any
wondering
doubt.
That yesterday. I'm like, this dude, Patrick Reed, always wears a red shirt and black pants on Sunday.
Yeah.
Why the
yeah.
pink?
He signed on recently with Nike. I guarantee you, Tiger.
Well,
was like, tell
like,
that guy he's
yeah,
not wearing
exactly.
a red
wearing
Nike
red.
Shirt. You can wear Under Armour or something if he wants, but if it's Nike, it ain't happening.
Well, I mean, if you go back to your original question about if he's liked, I mean, think about why he wears that. He's been wearing that since his junior days because he's always liked and respected Tiger. So, and they have a tremendous relationship, by the way. They've become close, and Patrick has become close with a lot of top-notch players like Bubba Watson, like Ricky Fowler, who was waiting outside of scoring to hug Patrick Reed, even though he came so close to winning the Masters yesterday. Jordan likes him. There are plenty of players that like him because of what he brings on the golf course in the team room on the golf course in the Ryder Cup and President's Cup and what he brought to the team room as well.
So let's talk about Tiger's weekend. Where were you at it with it? Are you disappointed, or that's pretty much what you think of where he should be right now?
Well, his first few tournaments in 2018, I think he exceeded expectations tremendously. If you had told me in November, prior to him coming back in December at the Hero World Challenge, that he would be in contention in two PGA Tour events prior to the Masters, I said, man, you know what? You got to stop sniffing glue. That's just not going to happen. But indeed, he did do that. Now, what that did is that elevated expectations from the media, from fans heading into the Masters. And frankly, I thought he'd be in the mix. I was a little surprised that he wasn't. I'm sure he's disappointed. However, here's what he's doing. He keeps, and that's fine. I get what he's doing, too. It's easy for us to sit here and think about Tiger Woods in 2000, 2001, but he's the one that experienced all this pain. He's the one that couldn't get out of bed hardly at all. He's the one that couldn't have fun with his kids like a normal father because he just couldn't move. So he keeps talking about perspective. Hey, you know what, let's pump the brakes here. I'm just happy to be upright playing 72 holes and going home without much pain. So You know, that's great. I totally respect that vision that he has. But, you know, at some point, I'm sure he's going to want to start revving up the competitive juices and showing up at a tournament to win with confidence that he can win and not just say, hey, I'm just here to compete and feel fortunate for it.
Is Tiger in all the rest of the majors the rest of the year, Todd? I mean, it might be a stupid question, but as far as his ranking or whatever, is he just in as the guy that's won all these tournaments numerous times?
Yes, he has no problems with the majors this year. And I'm sure, and I can promise you, even if he wasn't,
they would find a way.
He'd get a special exemption, but that's not happening this year.
With Todd Lewis of the Golf Channel, I think the guy who benefited most from Spieth going on the run he did yesterday was Rory McIlroy, because if Spieth didn't do that and Fowler didn't do that, and it was only McIlroy that could have made it an interesting day, people would have been carving him left, right, and center, because he faded quickly. When he missed that eagle putt on two, that was it. Were you surprised at all by the way his final round went, considering the way he played the first 54 holes?
Frankly, very surprised. I thought it was Rory's tournament to win heading into Sunday, to be honest, and which is saying a lot considering he was three shots out of the lead behind Patrick Reed. He made an incredible par on the first hole, knocked it to a few feet on the second hole for eagle, and then missed that eagle putt. Now, I don't know what happened. I guess the nerves. You just have to point at pressure that, you know, he played so beautifully 54 holes prior that the pressure of winning the Masters finally, especially after what happened to him in 2011 when he shot a final round 80, the pressure of being one of only six players to complete the career Grand Slam, I think he got to him. And he was straight stand up about how he played at the end of his round yesterday when he met with the media. He said, I'm going to win the Masters one day. I don't know when, but it wasn't my day or my year. So, yeah, but I was blown away. I think that, to me, that was the bigger surprise, the way Rory McIlroy played. It was a bigger surprise than Patrick Reed winning on Sunday.
Thank you for doing this, Todd. We'll do it again down the road.
You got it, guys. Love to do it.
There he is, Todd Lewis from the Golf Channel. Patrick Reed, your 2018 Masters champ. And did you see the amount of people already goofing on what his champions dinner is going to look like next year? Like immediately, because he's a grit grinder.
Yeah, he.
But people think that he's this beef master. He's not that big a guy. Like he's not John Daly. They just see a little potbelly on a golfer, and they're like, this day and age, it's not Adam Scott, it's not Tiger Woods, it's not Stenson. They see any kind of boiler, they're like, oh, fatso Patrick Reed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like he's going to order Domino's or something next year.
Check yourself in your parents' basement with pizza stains all over your T-shirts there, people.
What would you order, though, if you had the pick of the litter? Because you can get anything from around the world. It's your call. And you're responsible for everyone's meal. Everyone eats the exact same thing.
Kind of like you're going to the chair. It's your last meal.
Yeah, in a way it is.
What would you order?
I don't know what I would order.
My mom does a pasta dish. That's what I would serve the boys.
I might go noodle chicken penne pasta.
I got to bring something up.
And I would get sushi from Hawaii.
I would go to the alumni box, the Maple Leaf alumni box. The
chicken penne?
Exactly. And I'd say, bring down the whole order. Bring down everything you got. That gnocchi we had last week.
Just a carbo overload.
Yeah. I'd load up. Alumni box on the menu.
So there's a place in Italy, in Rome, called Il Verde Alfredo. So they claim to it. Invented Alfredo sauce. They make it tableside.
We got to call a veterinarian.
I would have a side of that, but I believe I would get prime rib from Lowry's Steakhouse in Chicago.
Good call.
They come and cut it tableside with the cream corn on the side.
I don't know if you can actually get like a restaurant's
people stop
order,
serving
though.
Cream corn. What the hell's up with that? I never have that anymore.
I was talking about it on the weekend. Like cream corn is outstanding.
Cream corn on a mash.
Now you mix it together, it's solid. But
hey, we gotta find a veterinarian and call them and say, if I think I have rabies, should I see you or a doctor? Could you tell me if I had rabies?
Yeah, if you're a vet, get in contact.
Just
with
cold
us.
Call
you remember
somebody.
Just Keith sent it in. Do you remember when Kramer?
All right,
was taking
figure that
dog
out, Tyler.
Medicine?
That's not too complicated for
Kramer. Had the dog's cough, and he went to the vet to get prescribed dog medicine.
That's right.
But then he started acting like a dog.
Remember Jerry was like, good boy, good boy.
That's what I'm worried about, is you're going to morph into our
Kramer.
Little buddy O-Dog.
So funny.
So if you're a vet or we can find one, let's get to the bottom of this.
We just got a cold call one and say, look, I think I might have rabies. Should I come see you or a family doctor?
All right. Ray's coming up just after 5. We missed out on him earlier. We'll start teeing up the playoffs with him. Leafs Bruins in the first round. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.
I'm just tired of the guitar rock. It's like...
Yeah, we could mix in something a little bit.
Something.
How about Kim Mitchell?
Ah, I won't let you down.
But Kim Mitchell, like, let's get some hip-hop or R&B
Anything.
Or something like that. Yeah, mix in something different. He's in WrestleMania mode. WrestleMania was last night, so he's running on fumes.
What's her name? Didn't
Ronda Rousey apparently was really good. I didn't see it.
She was outstanding on the weekend, wasn't she?
I heard she did a great job last night, and actually big news in the world of wrestling. I just saw this come across Twitter. Brock Lesnar was supposed to return to the UFC, and I guess he's decided not to do that, and he's re-signed with the WWE.
Wow.
So big, big news. Shockwaves throughout the MMA and wrestling world.
I told you last week, it's not even real.
Well, wrestling is. I understand why. Why would you leave WWE to fight in the UFC if you don't have to?
Face beat in for real.
Yeah. Why would you take real punches?
When I can say to you, twist my arm like that, put it behind my back, and then throw me over your shoulder onto the table.
I think that Lesnar enjoys it. Like, I went to
so
UFC 100.
Stupid.
That's where he caved in Frank Mir's face. Like, that was, like, serious.
He's a beast.
He's a monster.
He is a monster.
Now, he has been, I thought at UFC or whatever, he got disqualified for...
Yeah, he's had some he's been on the PED sauce. Issues.
You know who's a monster? Shohei Ohtani.
The numbers this guy is putting up out in L.A., unprecedented.
He pitches and hits.
Dude.
This guy's a freak of nature. I can't remember anybody like this.
Put this into perspective, okay? This guy tweeted this out last night. Shohei Ohtani has more home runs this season than Aaron Judge and more strikeouts than Max Scherzer. Like, more home runs than Judge and more strikeouts than Scherzer.
Isn't that crazy?
Like, it's only a couple... Yeah, of starts through the rotation.
A couple of starts, but he's the two-week MVP.
Oh, it's not even close.
No.
We've never seen anything like this before. This is honestly what you see in the Sandlot. Like, this is a kid who
this
pitches
is the guy that blows smoke by you and then just gets up and jacks yards.
You do not do this in the majors.
No.
You don't do this in college. Like, maybe in high school, you're such a good athlete and you're so much better than everyone else. You do not do this in the majors. This is the most amazing story in sports right now, what Shohei Ohtani is doing.
Yeah.
Like, the numbers, he's 2-0, 13 innings pitched. He's given up 4 hits, 3 runs, 2 walks, 18 strikeouts. He's got a 2.08 ERA, and he's had 19 plate appearances, 4 runs, 7 hits, 3 bombs. He's got an OPS up over 1,200, up over 1,300.
The baseball people, like the man, is it Socha still in Anaheim?
I don't know. You put me on the spot now.
I think he might be. He's a lifer, it seems. But they love it. The players love it. And guess who else loves it? The front office. Jersey sales.
Oh, it's massive. Oh,
yeah. This guy is blowing up, like, out of control.
It's massive. If they can win with this guy and you got Mike Trout, you know, you've got a couple of guys who are showstoppers.
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 We talked about when I was in New York and it was like, Clemens is on the mound. Let's go watch. This guy will be that guy.
But what do you want to see him? Pitch or you want to see
him
hit?
Anything.
I guess both ways.
I'd go down and see a game against the Jays just to see him play.
Absolutely, I would. You'd pray he's in the rotation and he's going to get some at-bats. Try to go to every game. If they're here for 3 or 4 games, you're praying you get the best of both worlds. And on the other side of the country, down in New York, Giancarlo Stanton, you see him last night again? 5 strikeouts again.
This guy's just swinging.
He hit 5 Ks again.
Second time, and it's still April.
He's swinging for the fences.
He is.
Pretty is.
Yeah, he is. He's got 16 strikeouts last week. Someone tweeted this out. Stanton struck out more times in a week than Joe DiMaggio did an entire season.
Yeah, well, they used to pitch it in at 35 miles an hour back then.
They are giving him the gears.
The Yankee Clipper.
A little bit skewed, but we get the reference.
Hey, DiMaggio was a great player.
I know.
And he was married to Marilyn Monroe. This guy's bar play was off the charts, too.
It's true.
Show some respect to Jolt and Joe DiMaggio. All right, so we'll get back into the Jays weekend. the Raptors weekend, the Leafs looking ahead to Game 1 Thursday night. Ray Ferraro will join us in the final hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050.
Are you thinking about a way to make money investing in real estate but don't want to rip out walls or fix leaky toilets? You don't have to. I'm Nick Carranza with Rockstar Real Estate, and we've become one of Canada's fastest-growing companies by helping investors profitably invest in nice homes in nice areas. The system we've used is outlined in our book, Income for Life for Canadians, which sells on Amazon. But you can get your free copy at OntarioRealEstateBook.com. Free, no strings attached, just go to OntarioRealEstateBook.com.